Before we begin, a quick word from me. An Englishman in the Balkans is an independent podcast created and produced by David from our home in Bosnia and Herzegovina. If you enjoy these stories and would like to help him keep making the podcast, you can support through the website at anenglishmanindebalkans.com. Thank you for listening, and now here's David.
You're listening to An Englishman in the Balkans.
I'm David Pacinovic Bailey, sharing stories of the people, places, and everyday life of Bosnia and Herzegovina, the country I now call home. There was something magical about tuning across a radio dial when I was a boy. You never quite knew what you were going to find. There would be whistles, crackles, and bursts of static. Stations would fade into one another. A voice might appear for a few seconds before disappearing again. And then, occasionally, you would find something that made you stop. A signal coming from somewhere beyond the familiar world of the BBC. It sounded younger, freer, slightly dangerous perhaps. This was offshore radio. Stations such as Radio Caroline.
This is Radio Caroline on 199, your all-day music station. We are on the air every day from 6 in the morning to 6 at night. The time right now is 1 minute past 12, and that means it's time for Christopher Moore.
And Radio London were broadcasting from ships anchored outside British territorial waters. Others operated from old wartime forts standing in the Thames estuary.
You're listening to the happy sound of wonderful Radio London, bound to cheer you up if you stay tuned throughout the day. The time is 7 o'clock, let's weather check.
Here's the latest weather words on wonderful Radio London.
And the weatherman says that the country is in for a cold spell. Oh my goodness, it's all down to the old winter.
To a young listener in Britain during the 1960s, they seemed to come from another world. They played the music young people actually wanted to hear. The presenters sounded enthusiastic and informal. They weren't announcing programmes in the carefully controlled manner associated with the BBC. They sounded as though they were talking directly to us. I didn't understand the technicalities or the politics behind offshore radio back then. I didn't know much about broadcasting regulations, international waters, or the commercial interests involved. I simply knew that something exciting was coming through that little loudspeaker, and I wanted to listen. Looking back now, I think those broadcasts planted something in me. They introduced me to the idea that radio didn't have to come from a large building in London. A voice could come from almost anywhere. It could come from a ship at sea, it could come from a temporary studio in a British town, it could come from a military community in Germany, and many years later, it could come from a small studio in Bosnia and Herzegovina. Perhaps the signal I discovered as a boy never really left me. On the 14th of August 1967, the Marine Broadcasting Offences Act came into force in Britain. It's often described as the day the British government made offshore radio illegal. The reality, though, was a little more complicated. The stations were operating outside British territorial waters, so the government made it illegal for British citizens and companies to work for them, advertise with them, finance them, or provide them with supplies. And the intention was clear. Cut the stations off from the people, money, food, fuel, and their broadcasts would eventually stop. Most of them did. Radio London had already closed down on the afternoon of the 14th of August.
The bell time is 3 o'clock and Radio London is now closing down.
Other stations also disappeared from the dial. But Radio Caroline continued. That act of defiance became an important part of British broadcasting folklore. For the listeners, though, like me, it was about more than legislation. These stations had demonstrated that there was an enormous audience for a kind of radio the established broadcasters weren't providing. 6 weeks later, the BBC launched Radio One.
If David's stories have made you curious about this quieter corner of Bosnia, come and stay with us at House Victoria. We have a comfortable two-bedroom holiday apartment in the countryside near Banja Luka, with plenty of space to relax and explore. We live here too, so we are always happy to share local ideas. Visit anenglishmanindebalkans.com, click Stay in Bosnia, and contact us directly through the booking form.
The voice of Radio 1, just for fun.
Music,
too much.
And good morning, everyone. Welcome to the exciting new sound of Radio 1. Yes, indeed, we've even got Arnold back. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the first of the Tony Blackburn shows. I shall be waking up every morning, except Sunday, between 7 and 8.30. So let's...
Several presenters who had worked aboard the pirate ships were suddenly heard on the BBC. The style was more controlled, of course, but offshore radio had permanently changed the sound of British broadcasting. The government could close most of the stations, but it couldn't entirely put the idea back into the box. At the time, I wasn't studying broadcasting policy or thinking about the future of British radio. I was simply a young teenager listening to it all happen. But I had discovered something that would remain important throughout my life. Broadcasting doesn't belong exclusively to institutions. It belongs to anybody with the ability, imagination, and determination to communicate. That idea took hold of me. There is a considerable difference between listening to the radio and becoming the person behind the microphone. As a listener, the voice seems to come from a distant and slightly mysterious place. You don't see the studio, the equipment, or that nervous presenter looking at the clock. Then, one day, you find yourself on the other side. There's a microphone in front of you. There may be a turntable, a tape machine, or a mixing desk. A light comes on, and suddenly, it's your responsibility to fill the silence. I became involved with land-based pirate radio in London during 1968. The offshore ships may have been disappearing, but the desire to broadcast certainly hadn't disappeared with them. Land-based pirates were often much smaller operations. There was no famous ship, no glamorous photograph of young disc jockeys standing on deck, and no large organization behind them. But there was enthusiasm, improvised equipment, and the knowledge that what we were doing wasn't officially permitted. For me, it was the first opportunity to cross that invisible boundary between listener and broadcaster. I helped with a team of a radio station called Radio Jackie, who initially broadcast from somebody's bedroom, but then after so many raids by the police and inspectors, moved around the countryside in a pram and broadcasting in fields using batteries to power the transmitter and programs recorded on old cassette tapes.
My name is Mike Brown, and it's my great pleasure to take you through on the first 30 minutes of the official opening of Radio Jackie. I'm going to be playing you some good records and also telling you about what is going to be happening to Radio Jackie, all about the plans and the programs you're going to be hearing.
Radio Jackie had an amazing audience, not only in South London, where their main target audience was, but across the whole of London. And on Sundays, these tape programs were played, but the presenters, the disc jockeys, would ask for people to give their requests and messages. And that was simply done by calling a telephone box. Back in the day, there were red telephone boxes everywhere around the United Kingdom, and especially in London. And each of those, believe it or not, had its own telephone number. So we would know which telephone box we were going to use. And it was quite unusual to see people just stood outside a telephone box waiting for it to ring, rushing in and then taking a message, a dedication, or a request. I can't pretend that everything, for example, on Radio Jackie sounded polished. It certainly didn't. But that wasn't really the point. The important thing was that we were doing it. We were taking music and voices and sending them through the air. Somewhere beyond the room where we were sitting and had recorded that program, somebody might be listening. That has always been the extraordinary thing about radio. You usually don't know exactly who is listening. You speak into a microphone in one place and your voice arrives in somebody else's kitchen, car, bedroom, workshop, or military accommodation. You might be speaking to a large audience. You might be speaking to one person who happens to have found you while tuning the dial. But that one person matters. Even today, after all my years around broadcasting, I still find that very remarkable. My journey through broadcasting was never a perfectly organized career plan. I didn't sit down as a young man and draw a straight line from pirate radio in London to an independent English language podcast in Bosnia. Life simply doesn't happen that way. There were other responsibilities, other careers and many unexpected changes of direction. My military life took me to different places and presented me with different opportunities. One of those opportunities was BFBS, the British Forces Broadcasting Service in Germany, where I began as a volunteer on the weekends. BFBS played an important role in military communities overseas. It provided news, entertainment, music, and perhaps most importantly, a series of connections. As they used to say on air, BFBS was your link with home. Your link with home. BFBS. And for service personnel and their families living away from Britain, radio created a feeling of shared community. A familiar voice coming from the radio could make a distant posting feel slightly less distant. Volunteering gave me an opportunity to learn more about how proper broadcasting worked. Pirate radio had given me the excitement. BFBS began to give me the craft. You learned that sounding natural on the radio still required preparation. You learned to watch the clock, operate equipment, select material, and recover when something went wrong. But you did this all by yourself. And things always go wrong in broadcasting. A recording refuses to play. The presenter loses the next item. A microphone is opened at the wrong moment. A carefully timed program suddenly has 3 minutes of empty space at the end. Radio teaches you to keep going. The listener doesn't need to hear the panic taking place on the other side of that microphone. That ability to remain calm, improvise, and continue would prove useful many times. Not only in broadcasting, but in life more generally. I was beginning to understand that radio wasn't simply about having a good voice, it was about using that voice to make a connection. In 1993, I started my own RSL station back in the United Kingdom. RSL stood for Restricted Service License, and these licenses allowed a radio station to broadcast legally for a limited amount of time, usually to a particular local area. They were sometimes used for special events, religious festivals, or sporting occasions. They also gave people the opportunity to test an idea for a community or a local commercial radio station. And for somebody who had grown up listening to offshore radio and had later experienced pirate and forces broadcasting, starting an RSL felt like another important step for me. This time, it wasn't simply a matter of sitting behind a microphone. A radio station needs an identity. It needs presenters, equipment, music, schedules, licenses, publicity, and money. It needs people who will turn up when they say they will. And it needs listeners. You discover very quickly that the romantic idea of running a radio station is only a small part of the reality. There are cables to connect, rotors to fill, and problems to solve. Somebody has to answer the telephone. Somebody has to persuade local organizations and businesses to become involved. And somebody is probably trying to find a missing piece of equipment 5 minutes before going on air. But then the transmitter is switched on. The first voice goes out. People begin telephoning to tell you that they can hear the station. At that point, all that work becomes worthwhile. My RSL was to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the part of the army that I had become a member of, the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers, who, it was always said, kept the punch in the army's fist through repairing all their equipment. So we launched a radio station called Punch FM.
Hello, I'm Stuart Barton. Join me on The Drive Show here on Punch FM every afternoon between 3 and 5. And on Friday afternoon, I'll be giving away a day trip for two to France or Belgium, courtesy of P&O European Ferries. With a better mix of music, news and travel, join me, Stuart Barton, on Punch FM 101.6, 3 till 5.
For 28 days, and I have to say, it was exceedingly successful, not because of the listenership, but because we were able to raise money for our core charity. As I said, an RSL was temporary by definition, and after a few weeks, that station closed down and the frequency fell silent again. But temporary things can leave permanent memories, and that experience taught me that creating a station was possible. You didn't have to wait for a major broadcaster to invite you into its building. With the right people and sufficient determination, you could build something yourself, and that lesson would become particularly important later. My journey after my RSL took me into more conventional British radio. I had experiences working with BBC Radio Surrey, and then I started to work with my local radio station from Reading, 210 FM. These were very different environments from land-based pirate radio or from a temporary RSL station. They had established audiences, professional expectations, and recognizable identities. Working in and around those stations allowed me to see broadcasting from a completely different perspective. Large and established broadcasters have resources and experience. They can provide training, structure, and a level of professionalism that small independent operations often have to learn through trial and error. And I valued those experiences very much. I also returned to BFBS, but this time working as a contract presenter rather than simply as an enthusiastic volunteer. Each stage added something more. Pirate radio had shown me the excitement of broadcasting without permission. BFBS showed me the value of broadcasting to a particular community. The RSL taught me how much work was involved in creating a station. The BBC and commercial radio demonstrated the disciplines of professional broadcasting. None of those experiences cancelled out the others, but they accumulated. And without realizing it, I was collecting the knowledge I would eventually take with me to Bosnia and Herzegovina. I came to Bosnia and Herzegovina in 1998. The country was emerging from a devastating war. Its communities were rebuilding, physically and emotionally. International organizations and military forces were still a very visible part of everyday life. The media landscape was complicated, to say the least. Radio was important. This was before smartphones, social media, and widespread high-speed internet access. A local radio station could still be one of the most immediate ways of reaching people. Radio stations existed across the country here, but the environment in which they operated reflected Bosnia's recent past and its political and social divisions. Into that environment came the idea for Oxygen FM. Starting a radio station in Bosnia was very different from creating an RSL in Britain. The culture context was different, the languages were different, the technical and regulatory environment was different. I wasn't a boy tuning around a radio dial in Britain any longer. I had accumulated years of experience in broadcasting and in the military, and more importantly, in life. Even so, some of the old excitement returned. A station begins as an idea. At first, it exists only in conversations, notes, and rough plans. Then the equipment appears, a studio takes shape, people become involved, a name is chosen, and eventually, if everything works, that idea becomes a signal. Oxygen's slogan was all around you, svuda oko vas. I still like that. Radio really can feel as though it's all around you. It enters ordinary life without demanding your complete attention. You can listen while driving, cooking, working, or sitting alone. The presenter may be many, many miles away, but that voice feels extremely close. With Oxygen, I wasn't trying to recreate a British radio station in Bosnia. Well, that's what I said, but I was. Nor was I attempting to reproduce the offshore stations. Not quite true, because that feeling, piracy feeling, was a feeling that I needed for my local listenership here in Bosnia.
Svako ljeto pamtimo po najboljim ljetnim hitovima. Opusti se i uživaj uz Oxygen.
But this was a different country and a very different time. But as I said, the underlying belief was still there. Radio could and would offer something fresh. It could bring people together around music, conversation, and a shared sense of place. It could create a space that felt less formal and less burdened by the divisions found elsewhere. With Oxygen, for example, we just played international music because at that time the three ethnic groups had their own styles, their own lyrics, and some of it, to be honest, was a little bit divisive. But then again, young people between 15 and 25 back in 98, 99, all they really wanted to do, they wanted to get out of Bosnia. They wanted to have something that the Western world had. They couldn't travel. Visas were, well, so tight. So Oxygen opened a window into a world that they wanted to look into. And we let them look out through the radio. Creating Oxygen was probably the point at which all the previous parts of my broadcasting life came together. The independence of pirate radio, the community purpose from BFBS, the practical experience of running RSLs, and the professional standards I'd encountered in British local radio. All had come together and travelled with me to Bosnia and Herzegovina. Now, radio has changed enormously during my lifetime. The medium wave dial I searched as a boy has largely faded from everyday life. The ships and sea forts are no longer the centre of a broadcasting revolution. Local radio in Britain itself has changed. Many stations that once had strong local identities have become part of a larger network. Programmes now can be produced far from the towns and communities they supposedly serve. At the same time, the internet has removed many of the barriers that once prevented people from broadcasting. You don't need a ship in international waters anymore. You don't necessarily need a radio frequency, a large transmitter, or a building full of equipment. All you need is a microphone, some relatively affordable technology, and something worth saying. Now, podcasting is not radio in the traditional sense. A podcast isn't transmitted at a particular time on a frequency that disappears into the distance. The listener chooses when to hear it. An episode can remain available for years. It can be heard in Britain, Bosnia, Australia, Canada, or almost anywhere else with an internet connection. But emotionally, podcasting feels very close to the kind of radio I've always loved. It's still one voice speaking to one listener. The technology may allow thousands of people to download an episode, but each person usually listens individually through headphones, in a car, on a walk, or at home. That intimacy remains. And that brings me to what I'm doing today, producing An Englishman in the Balkans from my home in a village here near Laktaši in the north of Bosnia and Herzegovina. As far as I've been able to discover, it may be the only independently produced English language podcast based in Bosnia and devoted specifically to life in this country. I say maybe because it's difficult to prove that nobody else is doing something similar, but it certainly is unusual. This podcast gives me a way to share the Bosnia I've come to know over more than two decades. Not simply the Bosnia of war anniversaries, political disputes, and familiar international headlines. I want to record everyday Bosnia. The villages, the landscapes, food, history, conversations, and those all-important small details of life that are usually missed by outside reporting. Sometimes I sit in front of a microphone, like now. Sometimes I take a recorder with me when I'm walking. Sometimes the important sound isn't my voice at all. It might be a river, birds in a forest, conversations in a marketplace, the interior of an old building, or the sound of somebody practicing a traditional craft. This podcast also allows me to listen as well as speak. That may be one of the most important things broadcasting has taught me. A microphone gives you a voice, but it should also encourage you to pay attention to other voices. My position here is unusual. I'm British, but I have lived in Bosnia for a long time. I'm not a tourist passing through for a few days searching for a dramatic story. Nor can I claim to see the country exactly as somebody born here sees it. I occupy a space somewhere between the two. That allows me to notice things that may seem ordinary to local people, whilst also understanding that Bosnia is much more complicated than the version usually presented to English-speaking audiences. The podcast is my way of exploring that space. It's independent, relatively small, and deliberately personal. No large production company behind it. No program controller telling me what subjects I should cover. No algorithm deciding which story is worth making. There is simply my curiosity, a microphone, and the hope that somebody will find the result interesting, which I hope you do. In that sense, perhaps I've never moved very far from that spirit of offshore radio. We sometimes romanticise pirate radio as a struggle between private young broadcasters and a humourless government determined to stop people enjoying music. The true history, though, was more complicated. The offshore stations were commercial businesses. There were genuine concerns about frequency interference, safety, and the complete absence of regulation. Not everything that happened aboard or around those stations was heroic. Independence doesn't automatically make something good. It simply creates the opportunity to do something differently. What matters is how that opportunity is used. For me, Independent broadcasting has never meant shouting more loudly than everybody else. It means being able to follow stories that might otherwise be overlooked. It means taking time. It means speaking in my own voice rather than adopting the voice somebody else thinks a broadcaster should have. And it means accepting responsibility for what I put into the world. When there's no editor or controller standing over me, accuracy becomes more important, not less. And I really do try to be as accurate as I possibly can. I have to decide what is fair, what is useful, and what genuinely deserves my listeners' attention. That is the freedom of independent podcasting. But it is also a great responsibility. I'm now in my 70s, and broadcasting still gives me something to learn. There are new recording systems, editing programs, and distribution platforms. Occasionally, I find myself staring at a computer wondering why something that worked perfectly yesterday has suddenly decided not to work today. The technology can be frustrating, but the essential act remains wonderfully simple. Press record, speak honestly, and listen carefully. Then send the result out. I no longer have to wonder whether the transmitter is powerful enough to reach the next town. The podcast can travel around the world almost instantly. And yet I still experience something of the same anticipation I felt around radio. Will anybody hear it? Will they stay until the end? Will something I've said connect with a person I may never meet? Download numbers and charts can provide part of the answer, but statistics can't fully describe the relationship between a broadcaster and a listener. One thoughtful message from somebody who understood an episode can mean more than a large number on a screen. Perhaps that's why I'm still doing this. Broadcasting has given a continuing thread to a life lived across different countries, careers, and stages. It's allowed me to remain curious. It's encouraged me to meet people, visit places, and ask questions. And now, at an age when many people feel their opportunities are narrowing, this podcast gives me a reason to keep looking outwards. There is always another story. When I first heard offshore radio as a boy, I couldn't see the people speaking. I couldn't see the ship, the studio, or the transmitter. All I had was a signal. It crossed the water, travelled through the air, and arrived through a radio in my bedroom in Britain. That signal opened a door. It led in one way or another to land-based pirate radio in London, the FBS in Germany, my RSL station in Britain, BBC Radio Surrey, 210 FM, and eventually Oxygen FM here in Bosnia and Herzegovina. Now there is no ship. There is no offshore transmitter. There is a microphone in a village near Laktashi and a podcast travelling through the internet. But I think the impulse is much the same. It's the desire to communicate without waiting for somebody else to grant permission. It's the belief that smaller stories and independent voices have value. And it is the extraordinary possibility that one person, me, can speak in one place and be heard by another person somewhere far, far away. On the 14th of August, 1967, the British government attempted to silence the offshore radio stations. Most of the ships did eventually fall silent, but the idea left behind survived. It survived in commercial radio, community stations, land-based pirates, internet radio, and eventually podcasting. And it survived in the imagination of a young boy who found something unexpected while turning a radio dial. Almost 60 years later, I'm still following that signal. I just wonder where it will take me next. So, that's it for today's episode. If you like the podcast, please take some time and give me a review or send me a comment or an email. All the ways of contacting me and the podcast here in Northern Bosnia are in the description or show notes, wherever you listen to this. Thanks again for listening. It really does mean a lot to see how many of you are listening from across the world. And if you want to shout out, please let me know. I'll certainly do that for you. So until next time, vidimo se opet. I'll see you again very soon.
Thank you for listening to An Englishman in the Balkans. If you enjoyed this episode, you can find more stories, previous episodes, and David Sunday's edition at anenglishmanindebalkans.com. And if you'd like to support the podcast and help David continue producing these independent stories from Bosnia and Herzegovina, you will find a support option there too. Thanks again for listening. And we hope you will join us next time.